WTTS on demand.
Hello. Laura.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. Is this Robert?
Yeah, good morning. Well, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Congratulations on the new album. It is fantastic.
Well, that's very kind. I'm very pleased with it. Well, I'm pleased with it. If I wasn't pleased with it, you wouldn't be hearing it. But great. I mean, it's a new place to go. And I just waved goodbye to the Band of Joy as they'd gone on the plane and headed back for the Americas. It's a bit of a weird thing, really, because I'm the only... the only British guy in the band. So whenever I have a band meeting, it takes about 10 hours to get to them. They went away, we waved our hankies as they got on the plane, and off they went. So we'd been working all the way through since about the beginning of July.
Well, are you having fun doing this? That's important.
Well, I wouldn't do a thing for a second if it wasn't fun. It's telling, but it's risky business, you know? But it's much better than being dull and... just getting trodden by your own, history. So it's great. I'm having a blast.
Well, I got to tell you that you have put together one of the most talented group of musicians to record and tour with for a Band of Joy. How did this come together? Was it a conscious pre-thought of people that would give the album the sound you were looking for, or was it just a collage of talented musicians that you've wanted to work with?
Well, no, I mean, my time really constructively was with Buddy Miller when we were working with the Racing Sand project. And Buddy and I used to talk nightly about material that we liked and the kind of mutuality of crazy rock and roll stuff out there on the edge somewhere between Link Wray and Marla. And the sort of breadth of knowledge and love of extreme music or, you know, beautiful music or whatever it is that we shared and exchanged was fantastic. And when Buddy and I, we were discussing it, let's make a record. So I started going through a load of songs, and he was suggesting various people who might become a part of the session, you know. Now, when these guys came along, it was like in there one afternoon, and let's see what happens. So everybody knew that by 6 o'clock, if it wasn't happening, there would be nothing uncomfortable. It just worked. And it worked so much that probably in about 8 days, we'd probably recorded 20 tracks.
That's an amazing experience in 8 short days.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, you know, we were recording onto tape. There was no fuss. Everybody was just going about their business. And Gillian Welsh and Dave Rawlins let me have their studio out there in East Nashville. So... there was nobody, I mean, it's not a studio that's used by the general public, but by other bands. So there was nobody coming by. We could just work, enjoy it, and then chill or split or just go out or do whatever. But the thing is, it was so easy to get to the root of it all, to find out whether or not it worked. And it did, and it does, and it's getting better all the time because it's now, these guys have been around us quite a bit in Europe. They're getting used to that kind of European approach to my music, which is incorporating a lot of kind of Indian, North African polyrhythmic stuff that comes on. So, and the kind of lilt of the record already coming from the kind of sexy shake of the music with Marco's drumming and Buddy's, you know, that kind of great flam that's somewhere between Bo Diddley, you know, and Tinariwen from Mali. The whole thing becomes quite a trippy affair now. It's a lot more raucous and there's a lot more reaching up to heaven than there ever was on that record. It's really gone somewhere great.
Well, the arrangements of the songs that you chose are just something incredible that I never would have thought hearing those songs in their original form. You have songs by Los Lobos, Richard Thompson, Townes Van Zandt. Were you the sole person picking those songs? Did you have help in picking those songs and arranging them?
Well, there's two different things. Number one, I collect songs all the time. And it's a funny thing because, if you think about it, I mean, I've co-written probably 200 songs myself over the years, one way or another. But because I wanted to sing, since I started working on Raising Sand and moving to Nashville more, I wanted to sing songs a bit like some of the more melodic stuff that I did in the 70s, where I was actually moving the melody around and doing something a bit more exotic and a bit more governed. So I needed to find songs that would work for that. And, you know, you're talking about House of Cards and, you know, Angel Dance and The Only Sound That Matters, which is a great song. You know, there's songs where the melody is very strict.
Yes.
There's the vibe. The whole deal is there like that. I think arrangement-wise, they just developed in the studio. I don't think we played anything more than about three or four times before it was actually down on tape.
Well, that's just a fantastic representation of some wonderful music from the past that you've freshened up, and such an appreciated thing for all of us as your fans. Now, the title of the album, Band of Joy, is actually taken from the name of a band you were in way back in the beginning of your career when you were just 17 years old. Can you tell us about the time in your life and the connection with this new project?
Well, I had the Band of Joy seemed to be a great name. At that time, Robert Plant and the Band of Joy, because the last thing it was joyous. I mean, it was pretty much, we were just skinny, starving kids moving around the British Isles trying to impress people with what we were doing. I mean, the whole idea of being an entertainer it's a bit sad, really, if you strip it right down and see what it really is. Because you need to be accepted on some level or another, and yet we were precocious and somewhat arrogant and definitely blessed with this kind of and gentle music. And John Bonham was the drummer in the most recent Band of Joy prior to this one. And we were pretty trippy. We were leaning very heavily on Jeff's Aeroplane and some of the Moby Grape extended stuff and Love, you know, Kaleidoscope, Beacon from Mars, all that stuff mixed up with Howlin' Wolf. So we knew that there was another way of doing it. We knew we could be accepted more if we became a bit more mainstream. But mainstream was not really where we were at. And when John and I joined up with Jimmy and John Paul, we brought what we had from the Band of Joy into that group. And, you know, it was the next step. So when it came to this now, working with Buddy all these years later, as we started to develop the songs, I think the first day we did Satan, Your Kingdom Must Come Down, and then after that we did Cindy, I'll Marry You Someday, where I started moving the lyrics around and making it a bit more churlish and a bit, you know, saying that I'd come all the way from England to steal your pretty hand, and the musicians smiled and realized that I'm still very much of an English rock and roll singer, you know. But in the short space of time that it took, maybe 3 or 4 days, we knew that we got something that was, it defied any kind of, you know, analogies. It didn't fit into any, it wasn't going to become Americana for Americana's sake. It certainly wasn't bluegrass. It's not country. It's not rock. It's not hard rock, but it does rock. And then touching on those songs from Low, which had been in my car for about 3 or 4 years, Monkey and Silver Rider, we started getting more far out, you know, and then Patty came along and joined in, Patty Griffin, and added her beautiful tone to the thing, which made it quite otherworldly. And now, of course, when we play, everybody sings, and sometimes it's just six of us singing a cappella, you know.
I saw you perform in St. Louis on the Raising Sand Tour with Alison Krauss, and the rapport on stage between you and Alison, it was like you've known each other your entire lives. Do you feel that kind of connection with Band of Joy?
Of course, yeah, because this is more testy than Raising Sand. It's more, it has a more of a kind of free-form feel to it. So, you know, there are times when I will purposely dive into the song in a place that they don't expect, just to watch the eyebrows lift again and just to turn it a little bit on its side. I did it in the middle of a live TV thing, a nationwide breakfast TV thing in New York, where I just modified the song. There was sort of abject fear on everybody's faces for about 4 bars, but it tilts over like a plane flying out of the sun, you know? And so I think, yeah, I mean, Alison and I are great friends and always will be great friends. And this is another thing, you know. And it's very much a very adventurous thing. And it's maybe more of a kind of, I don't know, it's more raucous and much more, it swings like crazy, you know.
It does, and I can tell, I popped it in my CD player, and I can tell by the end of an album when I really enjoy it, my volume's cranked up to like 40, and that's what happened when I listened to Band of Joy. Excellent job on that.
Well, the engineer, Mike Poole, I mean, I can give 1,000 name checks. People have been so considerate towards me and towards what I do, and it's a great new world that I'm in now, and, you know, I mean, people that would wonder what on earth I was doing. But if they only now start wondering, they must have been wondering for at least 20-odd years.
Well, you know, speaking of acceptance, there are so many people that I've talked to and so many generations of fans that have embraced your music and you in general. People say, I love Robert Plant. They say they love your music as well, but they act like they know you. Is that kind of creepy or is that the point of it all?
I mean, when somebody sings, you know, I listen to people, I listen to singers, and I really attach to the way that people deliver a song, you know, about lyric, about about getting into the lyric and getting around the lyric and nursing it or caressing it or cajoling it. So maybe you do begin to know what kind of person is behind the performance. I don't know. You know,
Are there any professional goals that you have not yet met in your long career?
I can't say that I want to do anything more than what I'm doing now. I'm very, very, very happy. I said goodbye to the guys yesterday, and off they went back to the States. And I think I never, ever planned the next thing while I was in the middle of the thing I was doing. You know, I mean, I don't want to stare into a crystal ball and say in 2 years' time I should be working in West Africa, you know, involved in creating irrigation plants or whatever it is off the Niger River. Or I just think I need to stay with these people for a long time because I'm learning more, and I'm learning more about how to sing as a singer rather than just project as a front man.
Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time because I know that you have a lot of people to talk to today, but a question I have that I try to ask myself every day is, what is the very best thing that has happened to you all day, Robert?
Well, that's a very interesting question. What's happened to me today that's been spectacular is I had a great Indian curry at lunchtime.
Oh, that's spectacular. Mine is that I woke up.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, that'll work.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and I'll see you at the Beacon Theater at the end of January. Much success on the album and life in general. Robert Plant, thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
WTTS. On demand.